Yeah, I don't know if it's more famous or infamous, but yeah, I pal around with those guys quite a bit.
I don't know how you do it, man. I mean, Broussard's one thing. Rob Parker's a whole nother thing, I would imagine, to work with on a day-to-day basis.
I mean, you know what the thing is? And I was actually talking with Gabe about this last night, Gabe Kuhn.
Yep.
He's a good person, right? So, like, he's a good person, at his heart. So, like, sometimes his takes, you know, they are what they are. But he's a good person, so it's easy to work with. It's just sometimes he'll say the most ridiculous thing you ever heard. And it just happens once a week, you know?
That's all right, man. Everybody's got their own opinion. That's what makes the world go round. That's what makes it so much fun to, you know, everybody's different. All right, so let's talk about kind of what's going on, because it's a big deal going on here tonight and right now, actually, on our sister station, 790 The Bet. We're actually carrying the Cards and Giants. We're in pregame coverage right now over there as we lead up to the Cardinals game tonight. But at a very special place, Rickwood Field. And you're there as well. So kind of tell us what Rickwood Field is, what it means, and kind of the whole backstory. And then I got a lot of crazy facts that I want to throw out there, too, that'll blow people's minds.
So Rickwood Field is the oldest operating baseball stadium in America. And that means that it was the home of the Birmingham Black Barons of the Negro Leagues, and saw several Negro League, countless, I should say, Negro League games from the Negro. And I just actually was at the, because Birmingham is also the home of the Negro Southern League Museum, right? So you saw all this, basically what I call American history, not just like black baseball history, but American history just on display in this museum. The Negro League Family Alliance, which was founded by Sean Gibson, who's Josh Gibson's grandson, and Rube Foster's grandson. They were big parts of building this. And Tony Clark of the Major League Baseball's Players Association, the president of that, former Tigers first baseman. These guys really built up this event this week. The whole point of it is to really shine light and illuminate on the history that has kind of been, I don't want to say forgotten. I don't want to say that. I'll just say it like this. When you learn about integration in school, you learn about Jackie Robinson. Yeah. Maybe you get Satchel Paige. You got to really go and dive in and find Negro League history. This event and events like it are an attempt to put this on the forefront, to explain exactly what was going on, because there was no other time in American history, and it's true before the Negro Leagues existed and true after 1955, that two major professional sports entities were able to exist in the United States for any extended period of time, right? Like, you look at the UFL, right? We'll see what happens with that, but even that's a merger of the USFL, which was a rebirth from a league that went defunct, and the XFL, which was another rebirth from a league that went defunct, right? And none of them are challenging the NFL, right? The ABA and the NBA. The ABA lasted for however long it lasted, I forget right now, but you see those teams merged, right? The ABA was not sustainable. The NBA ended up buying them out, essentially, right? Same thing with the WHL and the other leagues in hockey. This is the only time in American history from 1920 to 1955 where you had two major professional sports leagues that coexisted at the same time. And the biggest difference between them was, well, they weren't letting black people play white baseball, right? So black people built their own thing. And so that's why I say it's American history more than it is just sports history. But being down here and seeing like a field like Rickwood Field, which they have spent, I read in the museum yesterday, it said, the quote was, they have spent millions of dollars to make it look out of date, right? So it still looks the same, essentially, that it did in the 1900s when guys were playing ball there. So, like, to be down here at a field where, you know, Willie Mays played, Josh Gibson played, Satchel Paige played, like, it's hard to put into words. I have to find a way to do it. I got to write about it, but it's hard to put into words.
you know, and again, a lot of people listening are younger, weren't alive in the 50s and the 60s and that type of stuff. But doing research and kind of going back and learning about all of this, up until 1963, it was illegal for blacks and whites to play in the same field in Birmingham, according to a local Jim Crow law that read, quote, "It shall be unlawful for a Negro and a white person to play together or in company with each other in any game of cards, dice, dominoes, checkers, baseball, softball, football, basketball, or similar games." It became known as the Checkers Rule. That Checkers Rule was then amended briefly in the spring of 1954 to allow AL and NL teams to play an exhibition game at Rickwood on April 1st of 54 between the White Sox and the Cardinals. I mean, that type of stuff just absolutely, I think, blows your mind that that field is still standing, is still doing its thing all these years later, and that Major League Baseball used their good senses to go back and bring the history and the story of everything that's happened there to light for everybody. Field of Dreams, that was a movie. Fine. This is real life stuff.
Sure. But the thing is, Sparky, like, it, okay, 1950, like, it's not that long ago. Like, it feels like a long time ago, but it's also not that long ago. Like, you got to think, like, it was, like 1955, you just said it, I think. Like, that was the last time the Detroit Lions had won a Super Bowl or won an NFL championship. So it just shows you that the NFL existed in a way, like the NFL existed. The NFL that we know today existed. Did they have the Super Bowl? Did they have the merger? No. But the NFL existed. Like guys like Reggie Jackson, who you don't think of as like an old-time player. Like, you sure he played a long time ago, but he's not Babe Ruth or Whitey Herzog or Josh Gibson or Satchel Paige, right? He's Reggie Jackson. He played for the Yankees, Mr. October. He played in the Negro Leagues.
Yeah, that's, you know, wild.
It's recent. It's just on the verge of being old to me. Like, my dad remembers watching Negro League games, right? And, you know, he's my dad. He's, you know, he's in his 70s and his 80s, pushing, get up to 80, but he still remembers it. I mean, hell, Willie Mays played Negro League games, and he got, you know, unfortunately just passed away. Like, there are people living who played in these games still. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there are people out there who played in these games. And so it's not as old as it feels.
Yeah, but it is when you're in your 20s or 30s and don't know a damn thing about history and don't seem to care about history either. I mean, again, having kids that are in high school or just out of high school, that's a lot of it. In fact, the my kid who's a junior in high school, we were talking about some sports thing from the 60s or whatever it was, and he's like, oh, anything before 1990, I don't care about. And I'm just like, come on, man. You got to be kidding me. Well, that's like almost 30 years. That's over 30 years ago. Anything before that's irrelevant. I mean, that type of attitude drives me absolutely crazy that you don't respect the history of anything in life, none alone important history like this. And if you go back to, you know, this field and what it's all about, and people want to go back and, you know, with the Negro League stats, you know, being merged, and everybody says, well, hey, you shouldn't merge them and so forth. But and if you go back and look at just this field alone, distances on this field, outfield, 470 feet to left field, 478 to center, 448 to the right field alley, 335 to right. And eventually they ended up putting some wooden fences in front of this concrete wall that was the original fence. But this was a gigantic field at one point that these guys were playing on.
I mean, and so think about the numbers that you hear about the power numbers.
Yes,
right?
Think Josh
about
Gibson.
The space there's not only that, but think about the space these outfielders had to cover, right?
Yes.
Like, the Negro League game was a different style of game than it was in Major League Baseball. Honestly, ironically, it's kind of Major League Baseball has kind of reverted to what it used to be in the early 30s and 40s and 50s, where it's kind of just mash, mash, mash. Like, there's not a lot of stealing. And, well, with the rule changes, things have been different. But it's like over the last, you know, last 20 years of Major League Baseball, where it's more like exit velo and people worried about, you know, hitting for power, not necessarily hitting for average. Like, you know, you're fine with the guy hitting 250 if he's got 30 home runs. And that wasn't necessarily the case many, many years, you know, in the 70s and 80s, like when I think of like the Ricky Henderson era, for example, right? You probably want a guy who's going to hit for a little average and a little power and be fast and steal bases you know, it wasn't out of the question for guys being the, like what Ozzie, what Acuna did last year with the stolen bases and home runs. People were like, that's eye popping now. But like, it wasn't so out of the commonplace just years past. The Negro League started things like the hit and run. They started things like the batting helmet. Like, and a lot of this stuff you had, and Dennis Biddle told me this, who is the youngest living Negro leaguer. He joined the league in 1950, so after Jackie Robinson had integrated baseball, but he joined the Chicago Black Giants at 17, and he's still alive today, and I interviewed him a year ago for it, but he told me that they would have white general managers in the stands taking notes on what they were doing and the way that they were playing defense and the way that wow. they were playing the game. And then they would take that and implement that on their teams. So like the guys from the Red Sox or the right. Yankees would go and watch, you know, the Negro League games, take notes, bring back and say, hey, maybe we should, when we got a guy on first and we got a weak hitter, maybe we should bunt and see if he can get on base anyway.
That again, those are stories that, you know, people just don't hear. They don't talk about. It's never brought up. And you brought up 17 years old. Again, Willie Mays, 17 years old when he joined the Black Barons. Right. And the story goes, he only played home games because his parents were like, you're not missing school. You're not traveling with them. You're only going to play home games at that point. And to me, when you start thinking about that now in today's game, you're never going to see a 17-year-old playing in Major League Baseball or anything else with all the minor leagues and everything else that you have to go play in. And back then, you're talking about kids that are 17 playing with grown men and holding their own, which is an unbelievable feat. And then to talk about how long Willie Mays played and how different people that have saw Willie Mays play talked about he's the greatest player they've ever seen play in their lifetime. And it all started there. First, and so many other great players that don't get talked about nearly as much also played in the Negro Leagues too, that doesn't get talked about nearly as much. And now with the merging of stats and everything, hopefully it'll bring some light to it.
Well, not only with the merging of stats, because now you got to explain why Josh Gibson is the all-time hits leader and so on and so forth, but also events like this. I think Major League Baseball is going to, you know, the MLB, now this is a mouthful, but the MLB/MLBPA Youth Development Foundation just donated $500,000 to the Negro League Family Alliance and the Negro League and the Negro Southern League Museum to like do stuff like this. So like I think that we may be at the process or maybe at the precipice of looking at like so like if, for example, in February, it used to be just Black History Week. Right. And then people commissioned the Congress and got momentum on the Hill to then make it Black History Month. Right.
Right.
And then like
yep.
to same thing with pushing on for to get off work and make a federal holiday for Martin Luther King Day. Right. Like these are types of things that happen. Like it's not just it wasn't just an initiative. It happened from a whole bunch of different places. Right. I think that we may be at the precipice of seeing a Negro League week, a Negro League month in Major League Baseball. And it's something that I think would benefit everybody because the more you know that history, the less likely you are to repeat it in any way.
Can you kind of shine a light on, I don't know if it's reverence is the right word, but the amount of respect and everything else that goes along with Willie Mays' name when we start talking about the history of not only baseball, but of the Negro Leagues too, and everything that goes along with it. Because what was he, 93, I want to say, when he passed away. And again, I'm talking more about those younger, the younger people that, you know, don't have a clue. They know about the, you know, the over the shoulder catch and that type of stuff, but really don't truly understand everything he went through to get to where he ended up.
Well, I'll tell you this. I was talking to Roy Wood Jr., he's a comedian, writes for the Daily Show, does some sports stuff. He's one of the, for lack of a better term, ambassadors of this weekend.
Okay.
I was talking, and so you got to remember, they had the celebrity game last night, but the night before last, the night that Willie Mays actually died, there was a minor league game played at Rickwood Field. So there's going to be three games in a row played. But they played a minor league game there, and I was part of the festivities of everything that's going on now. They make the announcement in the middle of the seventh inning that Willie Mays has passed away, like over the PA system. And Roy told me, because I wasn't able to go, unfortunately, but Roy told me that you could hear people crying in the stands.
Man. Right? Yeah, but it is when you're in your 20s or 30s and don't know a damn thing about history and don't seem to care about history either. I mean,
sure.
Again, having kids that are in high school or just out of high school, that's a lot of it. In fact, my kid who's a junior in high school, we were talking about some sports thing from the 60s or whatever it was, and he's like, oh, anything before 1990, I don't care about. And I'm just like, come on, man. You got to be kidding me. Well, it's like almost 30 years. That's over 30 years ago. Anything before that's irrelevant. I mean, that type of attitude drives me absolutely crazy that you don't respect the history of anything in life, none alone important history like this. And if you go back to, you know, this field and what it's all about, and people want to go back and, you know, with the Negro League stats, you know, being merged, and everybody says, well, hey, you shouldn't merge them and so forth. But and if you go back and look at just this field alone, distances on this field, outfield, 470 feet to left field, 478 to center, 448 to the right field alley, 335 to right. And eventually they ended up putting some wooden fences in front of this concrete wall that was the original fence. But this was a gigantic field at one point that these guys were playing on.
I mean, and so think about the numbers that you hear about, the power numbers.
Yes,
right? Think
Josh
about
Gibson.
The space.
Yeah.
There's not only that, but think about the space these outfielders had to cover. Right?
Yes.
Like the Negro League game was a different style of game than it was in Major League Baseball. Honestly, ironically, it's kind of Major League Baseball has kind of reverted to what it used to be in the early 30s and 40s and 50s, where it's kind of just mash, mash, mash. Like, there's not a lot of stealing. And, well, with the rule changes, things have been different. But it's like over the last, you know, last 20 years of Major League Baseball, where it's more like exit velo and people worried about, you know, hitting for power and not necessarily hitting for average. Like, you know, you're fine with the guy hitting 250 if he's got 30 home runs. And that wasn't necessarily the case many, many years, you know, in the 70s and 80s, like when I think of like the Ricky Henderson era, for example, right? You probably want a guy who's going to hit for a little average and a little power and be fast and steal bases. You know, it wasn't out of the question for guys being like what Ozzy, what Acuna did last year with the stolen bases and home runs. People were like, that's eye-popping now. But like, it wasn't so out of the commonplace just years past. The Negro League started things like the hit and run. They started things like the batting helmet, like, and a lot of this stuff you had, and Dennis Biddle told me this, who was the youngest living Negro leaguer. He joined the league in 1950, so after Jackie Robinson had integrated baseball, but he joined the Chicago Black Giants at 17, and he's still alive today, and I interviewed him a year ago for it, but he told me that they would have white general managers in the stands taking notes on what they were doing and the way that they were playing defense and the way that they were playing the game. And then they would take that and implement that on their team. So like the guys from the Red Sox or the
right.
Yankees would go and watch, you know, the Negro League games, take notes, bring back and say, hey, maybe we should, when we got a guy on first and we got a weak hitter, maybe we should bunt and see if he can get on base anyway.
That again, those are stories that, you know, people just don't hear. They don't talk about. It's never brought up. And you brought up 17 years old. Again, Willie Mays, 17 years old when he joined the Black Barons.
Right.
And the story goes, he only played home games because his parents were like, you're not missing school. You're not traveling with them. You're only going to play home games at that point. And to me, when you start thinking about that now in today's game, you're never going to see a 17-year-old playing in Major League Baseball or anything else with all the minor leagues and everything else that you have to go play in. And back then, you're talking about kids that are 17 playing with grown men and holding their own, which is an unbelievable feat. And then to talk about how long Willie Mays played and how different people that have saw Willie Mays play talked about he's the greatest player they've ever seen play in their lifetime. And it all started there. First, and so many other great players that don't get talked about nearly as much also played in the Negro Leagues too, that doesn't get talked about nearly as much. And now with the merging of stats and everything, hopefully it'll bring some light to it.
Well, Well, not only with the merging of stats, because now you got to explain why Josh Gibson is the all-time hits leader and so on and so forth, but also events like this. I think Major League Baseball is going to, you know, the MLB, now this is a mouthful, but the MLB / MLBPA Youth Development Foundation just donated $500,000 to the Negro League Family Alliance and the Negro League Southern, and the Negro Southern League Museum to, like, do stuff like this. So, like, I think that we may be at the process or maybe at the precipice of looking at, like, so, like, if, for example, in February, it used to be just Black History Week, right? And then people commissioned the Congress and got momentum on the Hill to then make it Black History Month, right?
Right.
And then, like, to same thing with pushing on for to get off work and make a federal holiday for Martin Luther King Day. Right, like these are types of things that happen. Like it's not just it wasn't just an initiative from, it happened from a whole bunch of different places. Right, I think that we may be at the precipice of seeing a Negro League week, a Negro League month in Major League Baseball, and it's something that I think would benefit everybody because the more you know that history, the less likely you are to repeat it in any way.
Can you kind of shine a light on, I don't know if it's reverence is the right word, but the amount of respect and everything else that goes along with Willie Mays' name when we start talking about the history of not only baseball, but of the Negro Leagues too, and everything that goes along with it. Because, what was he, 93, I want to say, when he passed away. And again, I'm talking more about those younger, the younger people that, you know, don't have a clue. They know about the over the shoulder catch and that type of stuff, but really don't truly understand everything he went through to get to where he ended up.
Well, I'll tell you this. I was talking to Roy Wood Jr. He's a comedian, writes for The Daily Show, does some sports stuff. He's one of the, for lack of a better term, ambassadors of this weekend,
Okay.
I was talking, and so you got to remember, they had the celebrity game last night, but the night before last, the night that Willie Mays actually died, there was a minor league game played at Rickwood Field. So there's going to be three games in a row played. But they played a minor league game there, and I was part of the festivities of everything that's going on now. They make an announcement in the middle of the seventh inning that Willie Mays has passed away, like over the PA system. And Roy told me, because I wasn't able to go, unfortunately, but Roy told me that you could hear people crying in the stand,
man.
Right? You could hear people crying, and then they did a video. They had like a video montage of them. I guess they were going to play today before the actual Giants took the field. They ended up playing it that day because he had just passed away. He said there was a standing ovation for 90 straight seconds. So, and so not only did the people who were there at that game show what kind of the reverence was, I've talked to everybody from the mayor of Birmingham to the president of the MLB Players Association to grandsons of Negro Leaguers and some even Ron Teasley, 97 years old, still a Negro Leaguer. You will not find a soul who will tell you that Willie Mays wasn't the best baseball player they ever saw. won't find a soul. No one. You turn on the TV, you can see people talking about, well, I got Jordan, I got LeBron, I think this, I think that. No. Not a soul doesn't think that Willie Mays was the best to ever do it. And I don't know if that's a little cloud because he just passed away, obviously, but still, the fact remains, you can't find somebody. I saw a quote in there that said, they made the MVP award for Willie Mays.
Man, that is truly, truly amazing. He is Martin Weiss. A great guest here, obviously, today, host and anchor over there at Fox Sports Radio, part of the Odd Couple as well. And, of course, I appreciate you so much for coming on. Enjoy the game. And I know you're going to be writing some stuff up, so I'm looking forward to reading that as well. Everybody can follow him on Twitter at Martin Weiss. Martin, thanks so much, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime.
You betcha. Take care. There he is, Martin Weiss, Fox Sports Radio, joining us.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.